But John Lee has a nice image. He says that breath meditation is like your home, your Brihada Dhamma. It's a place where you can settle in, get a sense of well-being, allow your awareness to fill the body. Your breath fills the body. A sense of ease fills the body. That's where you can live. But you don't stay home all the time. The mind has other needs as well. It has specific defilements, specific hindrances, and sometimes the breath just doesn't cut it. That's when it's good to know other meditation topics as well. When the Buddha taught breath meditation to his son, Rahula, he didn't start right out with the 16 steps. He had Rahula contemplate the four elements. Think about it. Your body is composed of what? The same thing as the dirt and the water and the wind and the fire outside. In other words, the same physical elements. And then he had him think about making his mind like those elements. In other words, solid, non-reactive. Because if you're going to learn anything in your meditation, you have to be willing to put up both with good things and with bad things coming up. Not get excited about the good things, not get knocked off course by the bad ones. So make your mind like earth. People can throw disgusting things on the earth and the earth doesn't shrink away. They can pour perfume on the earth and the earth doesn't rise up to meet it. The same with the other elements. You can use water to wash away garbage. Use fire to burn the garbage, use wind to blow it away. They even shrink away from the garbage. The Buddha also recommended the four Brahmaviharas, the sublime attitudes, for dealing with problems of ill will, harmfulness, resentment. And again, equanimity is there to deal with, as he says, to deal with passion. But it can also deal with all kinds of other unhealthy attitudes. You just don't react. There are many levels of equanimity. There's the level that comes simply from making up your mind. You're not going to react to anything that comes up. And the sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensations, ideas. You're going to let yourself get upset by the negative things that are happening in the world, the negative things that are happening in your own mind. You want to be able to watch them again. You want to watch them carefully and not be blown away by them. So you can understand them. So those are some of the things the Buddha would say. Augment your breath meditation. There's another list which developed over the centuries. It's called the Four Guardian Meditations. These are for dealing with specific defilements as they come up. Two are inspiring, this recollection of the Buddha and the development of goodwill. Two are more chastening, contemplation of the body and recollection of death. We'll talk about the inspiring ones tonight. When you act like the Buddha, what is it about the Buddha that inspires you? This is something where you can think in ways that you find inspiring. There's no set way. The passage we chant just now is considered one way. Arhang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava. But that may not speak to you. So what is it about the Buddha you find inspiring? I don't know if you noticed the pillar out there. There are four animals on the base of the capital. And they represent qualities of the Buddha. There's the elephant and the horse, which are animals that can be tamed. And tamed through all kinds of difficult work. Because the Buddha did a lot of difficult things. Tamed his mind. as there's a verse, comes from a later tradition that says, tamed, he was the foremost tamer of others. He was able to get his defilements under control. So the teaching he gave was not influenced by any greed, aversion, or delusion. Which is one of the reasons why we can trust that teaching. Then there's the bull, which is a symbol of his strength. As he said, he was practicing different practices, trying to find the way to awakening. He developed qualities of conviction, persistence, or energy, mindfulness, concentration, discernment, as they were required for each path. And then when he taught his own path, the path that he discovered as the right path, again, he recommended these five qualities. Because he had found that they really were important. You have to learn how to depend on yourself in the practice. We rely on the teachings of the teachers, the Ajahns, the teachings of the Buddha himself, his noble disciples. Because without them, we wouldn't know anything about this path at all. And if the Buddha hadn't mentioned focusing on the breath as a useful way of training your mind, it probably wouldn't have occurred to a lot of us. And that's just a means of mindfulness and concentration. The fact that he was able to recognize that concentration itself was not enough, that needed more discernment. That was a strength, too. The fact that he's found these strengths, used them, developed them, recommends that we develop them, too. So you can take him as inspiration. Finally, there's the lion. That's his quality of fearlessness. Think about going out into the forest, having been raised in the palace. And he's willing to give it all up. Whatever the difficulties were, he didn't shrink away from them. And one of the difficulties you deal with when you go into the forest, out in the wilderness, is fear. There's the wild animals, there are the thieves that hide out in the forest, the diseases that there exist in the forest, of course the non-human beings. But he was able to overcome his fear of those things. And then when he found the Dharma, he tested it thoroughly. Because as he saw, most of us have our ideas about truth that come from conditioned things. He had found something unconditioned, which didn't depend on perceptions or thought constructs or any of the aggregates. Totally independent. He came from there. He came back from the deathless, which is a grand achievement. And so there was no reason for him to fear anything that anybody might say about how he was teaching wrongly or hadn't attained the deathless. There are many cases where Mara comes up and tries to taunt him, tries to insert doubts into his mind. And he immediately recognizes Mara for what he is. The forces of the world that don't want people to be awakened. So he had no fear from any quarter, as they say. That's the person who taught this teaching that we're following. So it's good to be inspired by him. You read accounts now that are trying to, quote-unquote, humanize the Buddha. In other words, drag him down to our level. And you wonder why people would want to bother. The Buddha's trying to show us that there's something about being a human being that's more than we are right now, but we can develop those qualities within ourselves. So instead of dragging him down to our level, we should try to lift ourselves up to at least the level that's capable of following the teachings. So think about the Buddha in a way that you find inspiring, that lifts your energy, makes you more fearless in the practice, stronger in the practice, more able to tame your defilements. And that's a useful way of augmenting your breath meditation. Giving a good mind a good place, as John Lee would say, to forage for food. Another is the development of goodwill. Goodwill is a wish for happiness, a wish for true happiness. And it's to be extended to all. Again, this is to lift your mind up above ill will for anybody, no matter how poorly they've been behaving. Because you're not saying, may you be happy doing whatever you're doing. Because goodwill has to be understood in the context of karma. Happiness has to be understood in the context of karma. You extend goodwill to others, not because they deserve it, but because you need it. If you have ill will for anybody, you're probably going to behave in unskillful ways around that person. And that's going to become your bad karma. So when you wish goodwill, extend thoughts of goodwill. And there are going to be a lot of people you think don't really deserve to be happy. Well, the Buddha never taught in those terms. When he taught people about the path to the end of suffering, he didn't first say, okay, I want everybody who's qualified to hear this. Only those who deserve not to suffer can listen to this. Everybody has karma in their background that could cause them to suffer. The whole point of the teaching is that not everything that you experience is shaped by past karma. There's your independent present karma right here, right now. And that can make a difference. And he's focusing there. So in the same way, you want to focus on people's potential to change their ways. Now, there are going to be a lot of people who don't want to change their ways. They're perfectly happy doing whatever stupid things they're doing. In which case, your goodwill has to be backed up by equanimity. But you remember that you're doing it for yourself. We also realize that extending thoughts of goodwill doesn't stop with those thoughts. You have to live in a way that's congruent with your goodwill. It makes you stop and think also about happiness. What does it come from? It comes from acting skillfully. What does it mean to act skillfully? How do you develop skill? Well, you look at your actions, and before you do anything, you try to make up your mind you're not going to harm anybody. If there is any intention that would cause harm, you don't follow it. Act only on the intentions that you don't think are going to involve harm. While you're acting, look at the results that are coming up right now. If you see any harm coming up, you stop. If you don't see any harm, you can continue. When the action is done, you look at the long-term consequences. And if you see that you caused harm, you have a sense of shame around that action. Healthy shame, the opposite of shamelessness. And you go talk it over with someone who's more advanced on the path to get some ideas of how you might avoid that mistake again. In other words, you're not embarrassed to talk about your failings. Because when you talk about your failings, you're providing an opportunity for others to give you good advice. But if you notice that you didn't cause any harm by your action, the Buddha says take joy in that fact and then continue training. In other words, you're joyful about what you've done, but you're not satisfied yet. There's more to be done. That's how you develop skill. That's how you find happiness. We here in the West have a very schizoid view of Buddhism. On the one hand, the Buddha's criticized for being a pessimist, talking about suffering, suffering, suffering all the time. But then you also get the pictures of him blissing out, all sweetness and light, hardly living in a real world at all. Then when you wonder, which is it? Well, the answer is neither. The Buddha is very realistic about what dangers there are in life. And the dangers are here in their own mind. But also what possibilities there are for happiness. Fully cognizant of the dangers. That's how these two inspiring guardian meditations work together. Because the Buddha is a good example of goodwill. Goodwill for himself, goodwill for others. He teaches us the path because he has compassion for us. And sometimes it seems like he has more compassion for us than we have for ourselves. But he's there as an example. This is what human beings can do. And even though you don't aspire to be going all the way to become a Buddha yourself, still you can follow the path that he said leads to the end of suffering. If people couldn't do this, he said, he wouldn't teach it. And if it didn't lead to true happiness, he wouldn't teach it either. But we can change our ways. Think about that image where the Buddha says, someone who's been heedless, but then becomes heedful, brightens the world like a moon released from a cloud. So no matter what your background, there is this possibility. You can change your ways for the sake of your happiness, and happiness is totally harmless, totally reliable. So when working with your breath gets dry, you can nourish the mind with thoughts like these. Uplift your heart. It's in that way that the practice develops. If you learn how to see for yourself what's needed, and then try to take advantage of all the different tools and tactics and strategies that the Buddha provides for our long-term welfare and happiness.